Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A minute or so past the hour, and I've only been back for one day. This is the second show back. It hardly seems fair or earned or deserved that I should take us to the front porch already for that end of the week relaxation session we know as Friday on the front porch. But by golly, that's what we're going to do. We're going to kick our boots up on the rail and relax and kick back and just have some the broad-based conversation about anything you want to talk about. Because it is, after all, Friday, on the front porch, on the horn. And I don't know, first things first, I mentioned last night that Ferg was having knee surgery. Does it seem like it just comes in waves around here? It certainly does from this perspective, but yes, Ferg had knee surgery this morning. He had his medial and lateral menisci. That's the Latin plural of meniscus. Menisci repaired arthroscopically. He is presently on the couch in the living room with an ice cast and a cryo-cool thing hooked to it. It's like ice, but only, well, I don't know. Look it up. But he's resting uncomfortably. And we're just trying to stay ahead of the pain. That's the key here. Stay ahead of the pain. I'm sure he will be quite cranky in another 24 hours or so. I love family values. But the doc looked at us and said, yeah. I said, doc, will he be able to kick 70-yard field goals when this is over with? And he said, I don't see why not. I said, that's great. He couldn't do it before. I'm sorry. I have a soft spot. I have a personal failing and weakness for cheesy old vaudeville the line. You know, doctor, it hurts when I do this. Yeah, well, they'll do that. Right. No, he's doing okay. And thank you to all of you who wrote to send your best wishes and inquire after his well-being. We were at the hospital early this morning, and I was surprised, never having taken anybody through arthroscopy before, that it took about 45 minutes to do it, and they didn't even have to gas him. This was all done under sort of that intravenous sedation, and he was pretty loopy when he woke up, but he's feeling much, well, no, he's not. His knee hurts like hell, and he, like I said, he'll be really cranky. But he'll get better, and that's the important thing. And bless his little heart. He was so pathetic when he was whacked out of his mind on those drugs. You know, I love you, Daddy. I love you, Mama. I love you, man. Yeah, my boy, loaded at 14. On the legal stuff, mind you, the legal stuff. But again, thank you. Thank you to all of you who inquired after his well-being and sent thoughts that way. It is the first day of October. We begin October on a Friday. We get a merciful bit of release tomorrow as my beloved Mountaineers don't have to lose to anyone because Coach Luther and the boys have the day off. It's one of those bye week kind of things. I think next week we face the Rebels of the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, who have come to call. And God only knows what Coach Luther will do to screw that up. But anyway, most of you have already tuned away because I said football. Oh, well, we'll get over it. So where do we go on this Friday on the front porch? Lunacy is always good. You know, just plumb crazy. Nuts. Yeah. And if you're going to go for lunacy, plumb crazy, and just old-fashioned nuts, come on, everybody. Where would you look in the United States? You want crazy? You want just twisted, irrational thinking? Come on. I'd say right now we probably got about 100 votes for Alabama. Probably 75 votes for Idaho. You know, a couple of votes for Kansas. You may have heard our buddy Ed last night talking about the right-wing Republican and lunatics in Iowa. Maybe some of you are thinking Iowa. No. But I know what most of, I know where most of the people are holding up their hands pointing at. But, you know, over there. Yeah, thousands probably of hands in the air going, Texas! Yes, Texas. You know what happened at the University of Texas, the Austin campus, earlier in the week. A student there opened fire on campus with his assault rifle gun. The whole university, which is substantial, it's a big place, the University of Texas at Austin. The whole university was locked down tight for hours upon hours. Local police and military units went plumb crazy. And then the shooter eventually, as they like to say down that way, saved us the cost of a trial and blew his own brains out. Suffice to say that the university community is still not okay. Those things, those moments where we make another installment payment on our deal with the devil, those installment payments take a particularly heavy toll on the communities in which the payment is made. And it's not something you get over really quickly. That's why Texas Governor Rick Goodhair Perry, shown in a photograph in the Post I'm looking at, shooting off a six-gun into the air, sort of Saddam Hussein-like. Rick Goodhair Perry, oh no, you can't make this stuff up, can you? No, you really can't. Rick Goodhair Perry has a solution to the problem of gun-toting students on campus at the University of Texas and elsewhere in the educational system of that sad but noble state. What's Rick Goodhair Perry want to do? Oh, I think you know. Rick Goodhair Perry wants concealed weapons allowed on every campus in Texas. UTPB in Odessa, Texas is a gun-free zone. That means it's illegal for anybody to bring a weapon onto campus, whether they're licensed or not. That doesn't suit. Hang 'em high, Rick Goodhair Perry. He says he believes concealed weapons should be allowed, but only if the owner is well-trained and licensed. Now, given what we know about educational standards in Texas, one wonders what well-trained means to Rick Goodhair Perry. Probably something like, knows which end of the gun the bullet comes out of. That's well-trained enough for me. That's good enough to join the militia. Send out a posse at sunrise. I wish I was joking. But right there backing up Rick Goodhair Perry are the Young Conservatives for Texas.
And they're calling on state lawmakers to pass a law allowing licensed students, faculty, and visitors to carry concealed handguns on state university property. Because you know what was wrong with what happened in Austin last week? I'll tell you what was wrong. Nobody got killed except the shooter. Where's the fun in that? Where's the freedom in that when you can't have a shootout with a lone gunman? And bullets are whizzing around and zinging by your head like angry hornets. And hearing the thud as they strike flesh and bone in a student next to you. That just don't sound very patriotic not to be a having that kind of thing now, does it? No, it doesn't. Rick Goodhair Perry. Sponsor of the shootout. Sponsor of the shootout. Coming soon to a University of Texas educational campus. Somewhere, hopefully, not near you. God almighty. It just makes your little noggin hurt, it does. Can't you just see the boys over at I Tap a Keg? Friday night. I got my MacBook. I got my 5-hour energy. Oh, shit, I almost forgot my Glock. Can't get to class without my shooting iron. Mr. Snapplewiz, you are late for American History 202. Why weren't you here, son? Oh, Professor, I got a good excuse. I was halfway here and I had to turn around and go back home and get my shooting iron. That's excusable, son. Sit down. Sit down and make sure you don't shoot yourself in the foot with that Glock. It's on the way to the chair. Yeah, good, good. Everybody else got their shooting irons? We want to be ready in case there's an invasion of a lone gunman. All right. Let's turn now to when St. Winchester first invented freedom in the form of a rifled barrel. Shooting gun. Hallelujah. Amen. God. You know, and maybe this is the beginning of a theme tonight on this Friday on the front porch. There is while Rick Goodhair Perry is trying to make sure that everybody is sufficiently armed to the teeth in Texas, we have problems elsewhere. Really, we do. The locus of elsewhere would be generally described as the Senate of the United States of America. And the embodiment of that problem, well, there's several of them. Let's start with Tom Coburn. You remember Tom Coburn. He's a Senate from Oklahoma. And Tom Coburn, he's a licensed trained physician. And he was catapulted into the high office of the United States Senate when he exposed and declared for the nation to see the rampant wave of lesbianism taking place in southeastern Oklahoma middle schools. Yeah, that Tom Coburn. Wah, wah, wah. It was a beautiful... No, it wasn't beautiful. He and another totally just batshit crazy insane right-winger, Repiglick and Jim Demented of South Carolina, decided that the Senate had just way too much activity lately thinking about them women folk. You know that Jim Demented recently declared himself God Almighty of the Senate and decided that he would stop all legislative progress himself, all by his lonesome, because the antiquated rules of the United States Senate that were predicated upon civility among the members and predicated upon the willingness of the members not to abuse the privileges that they were afforded by their membership in that august body,
Man, that was a mouthful. Jim DeMint had decided that he would just declare himself king of the Senate and decided that no further legislation would go forward. Well, he's getting some help from Senator Tom Coburn.
Lesbians!
He and Coburn have decided to stop a bill that celebrates... No, really. That celebrates the history of women in the United States. I wish I was lying to you. I wish I was making this up. I wish I was exaggerating even a little teensy, itsy, bitsy, tiny bit. But he's not. I'm not. He is. There's a bill pending in the Senate that would sell some land, and believe me, down in that neck of the woods, it's pretty darn rare. It would sell some land over near the Smithsonian Institution, where would be built the National Women's History Museum. Now, if this thing ever gets off the ground, I will be out there banging the drums for a special individual section of that Women's History Museum dedicated to America's first blogger, Anne Royal, and her paper, Paul Pry. Anne Royal, who was literally almost the single-handed mother of... That just sounds gross, doesn't it? Of the federal government's willingness to throw a little seed money at that newfangled telegraph device. Yeah. If you haven't read it, and you should, you can learn all about her in our good friend Jeff Bigger's book, The United States of Appalachia, which should be required reading for anybody who wants to understand the genesis of so much that is good in this nation. Anne Royal should have her own little corner of the National Women's History Museum. Now, here's the problem. The bill would allow a private group to use private funds to purchase the land. It passed the House way last year. It has bipartisan support in the Senate. Now, what are Tom Coburn and Jim DeMint upset about? Okay, let's have a look here. According to USA Today, the senators say their concerns are financial. Though the museum would pay fair market value for the land, the group has raised little money. And they said the new institution would duplicate more than 100 similar museums, some of which already get taxpayer subsidies. Because we've got too many museums in America. Right. Or maybe it'll be a women's history mosque. Abortion politics are also in play. The senator's action came 2 days after the Concerned Women for America, a conservative group. Otherwise, you can take out the word conservative and do a global search and replace with the word ignorant, wrote to Demented asking for a hold. The group's CEO, Penny Nance, wrote in July that the museum would focus on abortion rights without featuring any of the many contributions of the... Oh, I'm sorry, I'm doing the wrong voice.
Focus on abortion rights without featuring any of the many contributions of the pro-life movement in America.
Yeah. So they fired off a letter, Coburn and Demented did, to chinless Mitch McConnell. And they said that the museum was a laudable undertaking. It's a laudable undertaking. While the museum isn't asking for a subsidy now, taxpayers simply cannot be guaranteed of this in the future. Sooner or later, them communist museum mosques is always going to want some of them federal taxpayer dollars, and we can't be spending no federal money to be preserving no damn history of no damn women. Dirty old filthy things, if they'd read their Bible, they'd understand that they're cursed by God. Why do you think all that icky stuff goes on? This is what you get, and this is what you're going to get in addition to investigations, impeachment hearings, and things like that. If on November the 2nd, the Republicans take control of the United States Senate. No museums. Especially no women's histories museums. Well, hell, there ain't that much women's history to begin with. You can just ask DeMint or Coburn. There just ain't that much. I mean, it's laudable that they want their little history museum. But hell, there's 100 of them already. How many museums does the women folk want? All the time got to be celebrating their contribution to the country like they actually done something. This is another one of those I wish I was joking moments. This is another one of those but I ain't moments. This is what passes for responsible, grown-up, adult legislation and governing in the Republican Party. But it gets worse. Having done his little set-to with Jim DeMint of South Carolina, who has declared himself king of the Senate, Tom Coburn has apparently been forced into a position of having to one-up crazy. And you know, when crazy starts trying to one-up itself, you get into some real lunacy real fast, and some of it often turns kind of sort of, you know, bloody and mean-spirited and downright nasty. Enter stage right, Senator Tom Coburn, again. I wish he'd hurry up and exeunt, but he does all he does his entering, and it never comes out good. Remember Haiti? A poor, beaten, bedraggled little nation that has been eaten alive by colonial powers, including, you know, us, the U.S., for almost its entire existence. You remember Haiti. They had a bit of an earthquake there earlier this year. A little bit of hell and damnation. Misery. Well, we sent some help down that way. We pledged, the United States did, $1.2 billion in emergency aid. Because after all, they'd had hundreds of thousands of people killed in the earthquake. Thousands more on top of that left homeless. Right. Show of hands. Anybody out there? Anybody out there think that the United States, having the history with Haiti that it does, extending a little bit of aid and to Haiti, anybody think that's a bad idea? Anybody at all? Yeah, I didn't think so either. Haiti is in desperate need of the aid that we can and should offer. There's only one problem. According to the Associated Press, reporting 2 days ago, not a single penny of the $1.15 billion the U.S. promised for rebuilding Haiti has arrived there. Not one penny has arrived to give any sort of solace or relief to the suffering mass of humanity crammed on to the western end, the western half of the island of Hispaniola. You see, they need an authorization bill to come out of Congress that will direct exactly how the money would be spent. The House has done its part. The Senate, however, has failed to act. The Senatus, whose root meaning is the Latin word for old, who shares a common root word in senile and senescent, the Senate has failed to act. Guess why? Apparently there is rampant lesbianism in the junior high schools of Haiti as well, because Senator Tom Coburn has pulled the bill for further study. In this case, the word study meaning sitting back and giggling with fangs showing and blood dripping therefrom at the poor, miserable, suffering, dark-skinned people in Haiti. Coburn objects, and this is his reason for holding up the bill, to the creation of a senior Haiti coordinator. The senior Haiti coordinator and the bureaucracy around the senior Haiti coordinator would cost maybe $5 million over 5 years, $1 million a year. $1 million a year to administer $1.15 billion? Did somebody get an insurance executive on the line and see if they can administer that kind of money for that kind of money? Because you know what? I'm guessing the answer is no. He says there's no need to do it when the United States already has an ambassador to Haiti. He is holding the bill because it includes an unnecessary senior Haiti coordinator when we already have one. That's Coburn spokeswoman Becky Bernhardt. See, the problem is the coordinator wouldn't be in Haiti. The coordinator would be in Washington, D.C., working for the United States Agency for International Development, otherwise known as USAID. And they would devise a rebuilding strategy because, you know what? You can't just take C-130s and fly them over Port-au-Prince and release bales of money and watch everything get all better. We kind of tried that with shrink-wrapped bales of $100 bills in Iraq, and oddly enough, they somehow kept turning up missing while Blackwater guys stood on the tarmac and played literally football with them. Go deep. I'm going to throw you a million. Oh, my God. He ran out of the end zone, and he's just keeping on going. Son of a gun, what did I do wrong? Dadgummit. $1 million a year for salaries and expenses for a staff of up to 7 people. Frankly, you can eat that up in a heartbeat, and there's not an insurance company or hedge fund company or anything else kind of Wall Street-y company in this that would even be able to touch those kinds of low administrative costs. In case you're wondering about Haiti, and you may remember when Janny called in after her couple of trips down there trying to render some aid and assistance, things ain't exactly getting better. Of all the earthquake rubble that was generated by that horrendous event, only 2% has been cleared. 2%. That is to say, for every 100 chunks of rock or rubble or concrete or dirt brick, for every 100 chunks, only 2 have been picked up and taken away. That's what 2% means. Of the temporary shelters that have been built, 13,000 in number. That number, 13,000, represents less than 10% of the number of shelters planned that are desperately necessary. Here we are coming into another... Well, we're still in the middle of the hurricane season. It's not over yet. We're coming on through autumn and heading into winter. And as yet, 1.3 million Haitians are homeless as a result of the earthquake. Now, I know that Keith Olbermann covered this story. But where else have you seen this story? I don't know because I don't watch it anymore. Where else have you seen this story in the for-profit media? you see, you have to sort of drill down to the personal level with stories like this, because you have to get real human about it. And what you realize is that as we speak, you and I, as we converse, it is half past the 6 p.m. hour here on the East Coast. And in the preceding minutes that I have described this story, the likelihood that a human being, who might have survived had the United States aid reached Haiti in a timely fashion, that person died. Maybe 2, maybe 10, maybe 100 died. For no other reason than a vicious, hate-filled, sick, sociopathic, god-awful, demon-infested, if ever such a creature existed, senator named Tom Coburn. Remember last night talking to Ed where I said I just want to drive around his district in Iowa and say, did you vote for Steve King? Really? I want to look. Just shut up. Are you normal? Breathe in, breathe out. I mean, carbon-based life form, oxygen, all, drink water. Really? You're not some sort of alien pod creature that keeps sending this evil bastard to the house? That's what I want to do in Oklahoma. My heart bleeds for our old buddy Bart Cop. Because, you know, he lives in K-Drag, as he calls it. And it must just make him want to scream when he hears the throngs, the multitudes of Oklahomans who think that, well, by God, Tom Coburn's taking care of business in Washington. God bless America. God forgive America. And you know what? When you take the Tom Coburn story and you take the Jim Demented Doomsday Option story, that's what they've been calling it, the Doomsday Option. You can't help but come up with the clear understanding that something has got to be done in a pretty large way to reform the functioning of the Senate of the United States. The old rules that operated in that body that were predicated upon the civility and goodwill and desire to go forward in a fashion beneficial to the people of the United States, those old rules no longer apply. They just don't work anymore, because they have been so thoroughly abused by right-wing ideologues, bigots, and fascists. And you have to wonder, given what he has witnessed in the last 2 years, all of that and this, is even all of that and this enough to convince Harry Reid, should he be reelected, that the rules need to be changed? I know that you are as sickened by the answer that you have unspoken in your mind as I have in mine. No, it just means we need to be a little nicer to them. We're not being nice enough to them, Bob. If we were just a little nicer to Coburn and Dement and the McConnells and the rest of those freaks, they'd work with us, really, Bob. They would. I only wish that there was some hope that if we retain our majority, that we march in there in that first session when we set down, when the Senate sets down its rules of engagement, and somebody stand up and say, enough of this crap. But that may be thinking well ahead of ourselves in the first place, because there's no guarantee we're going to keep the Senate. There's plenty of reason to think that we might not. For instance, Russ Feingold. Russ Feingold? The guy's barely been heard from for a couple of years now. Russ Feingold is in trouble in Wisconsin. Wisconsin. Russ Feingold is in trouble. And he is in trouble thanks to a repiglickin by the name of Ron Johnson. Ron Johnson. Ron Johnson, who, well, he just wants to see the right thing done in Wisconsin. Ron Johnson testified against a child victims bill in that state that would have made it easier to go after people who prey sexually upon little children. He opposed it. Remember how he talked last night about Charles Steele Jr. of Alabama, who opposed coal ash regulation because under the guise of civil rights? This is a little bit like that. Russ Feingold's opponent in Wisconsin testified against a bill that would have made it easier to prosecute and pursue justice. Remember? With liberty and justice for all? Yeah, that justice. He testified against this bill because it would have made it more likely that more victims of priestly pedophilia would have come forward. And that man wants to go to the United States Senate and replace Russ Feingold. We may be ahead of ourselves in even talking about how the Senate should be reformed, because there may not be a Senate to reform come November 3rd. No, and there's much more craziness, tons more. We've got some religious stuff to go into. You know, we didn't have a prayer meeting Wednesday. We got some religious stuff to go into this evening, too. And it's the dangerous kind. They walk among us, shall we say, the monsters. But we'll take a little break and we will come back to your phone calls. We have six lines, all six lines lighted up and waiting to conversate on this Friday on the front porch. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Love.
for back in the early 90s, the Gin Blossoms found out about you and, what is it, 17 and a half minutes before the hour? Yeah, and what that means is it's time to go to the phone. And let's see who we got. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Juanita.
You were talking about Tom Coburn?
Yes.
They had a little thing I got through the mail to vote for your favorite senator and representative and also your unfavorite.
Mm-hmm.
And he was my choice because I've got to where the minute I see him on TV, I just can't take him because I think it's, I watched the, when they were trying to do, when they had all those hearings on the medical plan.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard all of his baloney that he was giving out. And the thing that made me mad was him and another guy, Republican, they were doctors. And the other people, oh, they're doctors. You know, they know what.
Trust me, I'm a doctor. Yeah.
Yeah.
You could put him in a Dr. Pepper commercial next to Gene Simmons.
Yeah, and the thing is that all doctors is not the same. I mean, if they're, you know. And him, he just like so self-righteous or something. And you know, he's a big deal over at that, what is the name of that place?
Oh, sorry, you caught me out, too.
You know what I'm talking about? The word that they're got their religious stuff going on?
Oh, K Street?
C Street, yeah. Yeah, he's a big deal over there. He's the one that told somebody that even if they were a child molester, that he would have to forgive them because they were a brother or something like that. I don't know. But I just, and then he turns around and says that they didn't let them in on the that plan about the medical and all. And I saw they were on hours and hours and hours and hours. And kept bringing up stuff, and the Democrats used some of the stuff too. Some of the stuff was put in the plan, and yet they'll say we weren't asked or nothing, you know. But yeah, he's my most unfavorite, and I think I voted for that woman from that nasty woman from Carolina for.
Oh, Virginia Double X Fox.
Yeah, but you know, you got so many to choose from.
Well, you do,
It's houses.
It's like going to a cafeteria of sleaze, isn't it, Juanita?
Yeah, yeah. But well, I still hear talk about. I read that about the Haitians. I just read about it yesterday, and I thought, oh boy. Well, he's the one that kept the. Unemployment thing from going through. He held that up for a while. And, you know, where it kind of skipped, they had to skip but 2 or 3 weeks or more. I'm tired of these people. Him, between him and another one that I think the number one was, they voted for was, Lieberman. But I don't hear that much out of him lately. But these people these little tin horn people that.
Yeah, I think the guy you're thinking about in conjunction with Coburn might have been Paul Brown of Georgia. You know, he's
a
doctor.
That's another one. No, there's one from Texas, too.
Oh, and there's one from, what, Wyoming or Montana?
And a lot of. The Democrats are intimidated by them. Oh, they know what they're talking about because they're doctors. And, there'd be more than one of them. There's more than one of them on that panel, you know, from the Senate. But, yeah, there's some guy from, Texas on there. He's heavy set. He kind of looks like the guy that's the governor of New Jersey.
No, I can't come up with it with a name.
I don't know his name either. But anyway, that's who he looks like, kind of. But you seen that about the governor of New Jersey, didn't you?
Which?
Watt. Just talking down to people. You know, he went to campaign for, I guess, that woman in Nevada, I believe.
Oh, Sharon Angle?
His name is Christie,
yeah.
Governor. And he was so rude to the people in the audience. He was, like, standing up for her, and he was just really nasty. One guy was trying to ask her a question, and he just got all over him. And then he even got over all over a lady. And the guy, they interviewed the guy that he jumped onto. He said, I just wanted to ask a question. He said, I certainly won't vote for her now. It was somebody from California. I can't remember now because they were in California.
But, you know, like you said, there's so many of them. You almost don't have to give a name to them, Juanita.
I know, and you know what?
Just more wing nuttery from wing nuts.
Right, right. One ringy dingy to another.
Right. Can't tell the players without a program. It's the Wingnut Daily Journal.
Yeah, but I had to say something about that guy because he is really, because a lot of people listen to him, you know, he reminds me, I'm sad to say this, but he reminds me of Baptist preachers that I've been around. And that's not a
compliment. No.
No. Can I ask you, what are you going to be talking about? Religious?
There's just two or three different things, and they all kind of merge together. I mentioned it last night, the business with the Air Force, and why would the Air Force, Rick Goodner kind of got the ball rolling.
Yeah, that was amazing, wasn't it?
There are a couple of other things out there, another moment of exploring Christian Reconstructionism. And sort of correcting the record with the current rage for false equivalences between right wing lunatics and, you know, the fact that we don't have anything that quite matches up with them, but people like John Stewart keep insisting on saying we do.
No, we don't, sad to say. But something came to my mind while we were talking, and I forgot it. But anyhow, I'll let you go because, this is not religious, but you heard about them finding out that our government, I don't know when it was, but injecting, I think it was Guatemalans.
Yeah, Guatemalans with syphilis. We finally got a... Hey, it only took us 60 years to apologize. It took the Roman Catholic Church still hasn't gotten around to apologizing for the genocide they committed in the same region, and that was, you know, 600 years ago.
Yeah.
Or 500 years ago.
You know what? I'll tell you what gets me about the churches and all, and especially like with the Catholics and hiding, you know, just moving a molester from church to church and want to keep it undercover. And, you know, the Bible, God just tells on his people. I mean, he just lets it, you know, in the Bible, all this stuff is exposed.
Well, you know what, the fascinating thing about the story coming out of Guatemala, the United States official apology to Guatemala for its medical experimentation. You know, that was 60 years ago, so that in 1950, right? We had just gotten done uncovering sick, twisted, absolutely disgusting experimentation performed by the Third Reich on concentration camp victims, right?
Oh, yeah.
And we decided we would do it ourselves. Now, you've probably heard of the Tuskegee syphilis experiments.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, the same guy who designed that study, a guy named John Cutler, is the same guy who was behind the Guatemala thing. Now, in Guatemala, they got 696 participants together. Yeah. They found them. They got them from local prisons, army bases, and mental health facilities.
Yeah, they were mental patients.
Yeah, they were. Yeah, like they could participate meaningfully. some of them, they said, here, and paired them up with hookers that they knew had syphilis. Others among them, however, wanted, and I'm not trying to be graphic, this is just the reality of what the United States did. They had syphilis bacteria poured onto their penises, forearms, or faces.
Oh, my gosh.
And they were subsequently treated with penicillin, but they may not have been adequately treated enough to keep the disease from ravaging them.
Well, the last thing I heard was it wasn't enough of the sponsorship, so they dropped it, so they probably left them like they were, you know. But, you know, Bob, the thing is that people in mental hospitals and children with disabilities and so forth, you know, mentally challenged, you know what I'm saying, and people just put them into a home. And those people were experimented on.
Sure.
And probably.
Well, what's the sickest thing about
soldiers?
The sickest thing about all of this, I think, is that the United States knew it was doing something that was morally repugnant and reprehensible. Surgeon General Thomas Perrin, P-A-R-R-A-N, at the time said, quote, "You know, we couldn't do such an experiment in this country." So he knew. He knew.
Yeah. Oh, they did all kind of stuff. You know how they would put stuff in the air in New York City, the CIA did. And also they had, like, supposed to be hookers, and they'd get the guys to come in there, and they'd give them LSD.
Yeah.
And they didn't know. They didn't know.
Well, I was going to say, what I find interesting out of this, though, this is the statement that was released from Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and Kathleen Sebelius. "We deeply regret that it happened, and we apologize to all the individuals who were affected by such abhorrent research practices." The sexually transmitted disease inoculation study conducted from 1946 to 1948 in Guatemala was clearly unethical. And she has called the president of Guatemala, Secretary Clinton has.
Yeah.
She has called Arturo Valenzuela, the assistant secretary of state for Western Hemisphere Affairs. Valenzuela said in a Twitter message, he's the one who released the news that Clinton had called. But there's something that is absent from all of this. We're expressing outrage, outrage, I tell you, outrage.
Well.
Okay? But there's nothing in this story that says we're writing any checks.
Yeah, right.
We're terribly, 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 terribly sorry. We're terribly, terribly, terribly unable to write you a check.
Right. But the thing, you know, like they've experimented on our troops.
Sure. And I think the reason
the
reason that you and I are talking about this, I don't think either of us was working in this direction, but it's how this all works out. As a horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner points out, Mengele was a doctor, right?
Right.
And John Cutler, who did the Tuskegee experiment and the Guatemala experiment, he was a doctor. Other doctors participated in the experiment.
Yeah.
And yet here we have people like Tom Coburn. Well, we've got to listen to him because he's a doctor.
Right.
Well, you know, being a doctor is no guarantee that you're going to behave ethically. And especially in our for-profit medical system, it's almost a guarantee that you won't.
You know, like, if you ever work in a hospital or around doctors and so forth, you find out, I used to wonder on the soap operas why that has so much stuff about doctors. I used to watch a long time ago when my mother was living, used to watch soap operas, and they would have a lot about doctors, and I think, why do they do that? And when I went to work at a hospital, I found out that was a good source, because believe me, boy, some you would think of stuff, and it's just like the politicians.
Yes.
And we, you know, we go along down here, you know, we're these nice, polite people, you know. Oh, we try to see good in everybody, just like you were talking about. Oh, just be nice to those people. No, be nasty to them because they don't appreciate. They think you're a dimwit and a nut.
And weak. Know, and weak.
Yeah, I'm weak. And I've had to learn it the hard way, I'll tell you. Because I was always so trusting and blah, blah, you know. And then when you join the church, you think, well, I'm not supposed to think anything bad about anybody, but my gosh. I don't mind saying I don't like somebody. It don't mean I hate them, but I definitely do not like them.
Well, just because you don't hate them, Juanita, doesn't mean that you need to sort of bow and scrape and kowtow to them. There's a big daggum difference.
Right, because there are people that will use you and use you and use you because they know how to read you. Just like these child molesters, they know how to read a child. They know when a child is neglected or lonely or whatever. And, you know, it's just something that a lot of people, well, I just couldn't be nasty to somebody. Well, you know, I'm not saying to be nasty, but, of course, I've been accused of it. When I talk like I do now, you know, I was accused by my neighbor the other day of yelling at her. And she wasn't going to talk to me no more.
Yay.
It was about my cats, but she said I had 40 cats. I said, 40 cats? I said, if you've seen 40 cats around here, you don't. They're not mine.
Mercy.
And right now, I do have too many, but not nowhere 40. But, God, I don't know. Sometimes you can't breathe to suit people. I found that out, too.
That is the truth, Juanita.
You're wasting the breath and... Oh, you know, I'm just to tell you this offhand. I heard a little snippet of Laura Ingraham making fun of Obama going around to the barbecue. Can you imagine that? Going around to these barbecues. Oh, she's so dim-witted.
Oh, she...
She never heard of Hammond.
Well, no, she is living proof of that little truism that you just sort of... In classic Juanita fashion, threw out there and let breeze by, and it just sort of settles and settles and settles. Sometimes you can't breathe to suit people, Juanita.
No, uh-uh.
Laura Ingraham doesn't like Barack Obama going to barbecues. Well, she wouldn't like it if he had a beer with somebody either, because there's living proof of that as well.
No, and you have the wrong way of the hamburger. She never heard of have it your way.
Right, right. He can't eat a hamburger right.
I know. Well, but my God, you know. But maybe Obama, I hope, will learn. But maybe he hasn't learned it. I don't know.
Be nice if we saw some evidence of that learning curve once in a while.
Now, Jake thinks that he might be... They might be saying this stuff about us to blame us if they lose.
Yeah, there's a lot of that going around that this is all a big setup for, those whining leftists.
But, you know, they don't think about all the years we've put up with other stuff, and we wanted somebody to kind of be nice to us. And you wait till somebody like Alan Grayson. You know what? When I first heard that, it really hurt me. And I called his office. I called them. Because I don't have anybody down here, and if you call Nelson's office, they don't act like
that. Yeah, good luck.
What you have to say. So I call, and the guy's really nice, and I even told him when you were in Washington, I told him about your show. And he said, oh, I never heard of that. And I was telling him about it, and I was telling him about mountaintop removal.
Oh, Juanita, you're an angel. You are, dear. I don't know how you keep them wings hidden.
I know.
You have yourself a good evening,
you
dear.
You too.
And a wonderful weekend.
You too.
You going to watch the big rally tomorrow? Do you get free speech TV? Yeah. I don't.
No, but you can get it online.
Well, then that
24/7 online. It's not going to be on C-SPAN?
I don't know if it will. I don't know if it will or not. You know, they showed up for White Stock. I don't know if they'll show up for the...
Well, I thought I was looking for y'all on C-SPAN, and I couldn't find Doodle Squat. Was anybody filming y'all?
No, we had lots. Yeah, we had lots of film crews, but I guess we didn't. I guess we didn't merit.
Yeah.
We didn't merit C-SPAN coverage.
And I want to know why they have like somebody like Bennett on and not you.
Because they don't know I exist? Because I'm not as handsome as Bingo Billy Bennett? I don't know. Yeah, he, that's one good-looking man, that Bill Bennett.
Oh, Bill Bennett, gosh, Bob.
Took a minute, but I knew I'd get a rise out of you. Juanita, have a wonderful weekend, dear.
You too.
Bye now. 2 minutes past the hour, we're going to take our top of the hour break and come back to more of your phone calls. A couple of lines open if you want to jump in. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877-4-HEAD-ON, 304-658-3333 on your nickel. This is what liberal conversation radio sounds like. This is The Horn.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right.
We do?
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at CityNet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit CityNet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Minutes past the hour where I am. What time is it where you are, where I'm, where we're podcasting? This is Front Porch Friday on the Horn. I'm Bob. And just a gentle reminder, this is the beginning of the month. And we, you know what, I'm not going to give up on this notion of finding 250 Horn listeners who are willing to be part of the Thrifty 250 and just get this constant the drumbeat of fundraising taken care of. 250 people with $10. And remember, that comes out to less than 5 cents an hour, for what, that's what you get the horn for. And can you, is there anything out there that you can get for 5 cents an hour? I don't think so. Not even if it makes you itch when you're done. You can't get it for 5 cents an hour. You know what I mean? And, you know, we run that CityNet ad every night, and I don't say enough good things about the people at CityNet. I'm going right back to the phones, by the way. I don't say enough good things about CityNet. When we've got a problem here, I pick up the phone, I call them, and they don't quit until we've got the problem solved. Usually it comes down to the fact that the last mile of the drop, if you know what the drop is, the line coming in here, the last mile of the drop is handled by Verizon, which then dumped all of its West Virginia customers on this sort of fly-by-night operation that screwed up everything it ever touched called Frontier. All right? So usually it winds up being somewhere in that last mile of the drop because Verizon, which is now Frontier, could screw up a one-car funeral. Well, just a little reminder as we go forward. You know, we can't do any of this without the intertubes. We can't do this without your support, and we can't do it without the intertubes. Well, you know the stimulus money that's done a lot of good in a lot of places. West Virginia, being a very rural place, we qualified for $120-some-odd million, maybe $126 million worth of stimulus money to bring broadband to rural areas. And what was the Manchin administration's idea for this? Let's give it all to Frontier. $126 million, and the state government of West Virginia just said, let's write a $126 million check to Frontier. Well, my friends, our friends at CityNet didn't take too kindly to it, and they are raising a stink. Because they're saying that what Frontier is getting the money to do is going to be to build a network that will benefit only Frontier. And from everything that I've read, it appears to be true. Plus the fact that Frontier has nothing in the way of a proven track record. In fact, they have the exact opposite. They've gone into other places in the Northeast and completely screwed up phone systems and the like. Not to mention the interweb tubes. But, you know, West Virginia, according to Joe Manchin, is open for business. So we're just going to give all the money to Frontier. Despite the fact that the outfits like CityNet have proven themselves time and time again to be willing to go the extra mile to render extremely, extremely competent customer service and absolute dedication to solving any problem that comes their way. So just remember, when you hear that CityNet ad, they deliver great service if you're in the area where they do service. They're a West Virginia company, but they go into Ohio, they go into Pennsylvania, places like that. Just remember that.
And also, just remember that, you know, when you've got a problem and you call CityNet, you get a real live human response lickety-split, and you're not necessarily shunted off to some call center in Bangalore. Right, but you probably... Frustration. Because, see, one of the things I keep looking at is an upgrade of our... But, you know, that's another fundraising issue. An upgrade of our capacity here so that we can do more stuff. So that if we ever do get the wherewithal to do things like video, we'll actually have the great big, really big pipe with which to do it. And by the way, News Ninja Gene, who gets up every morning and reads the entire internet for us, said, Bob, I know why you're never going to be on CNN or C-SPAN or any of those guys. You won't hawk Swedish mattresses for them, or even gold. So now, Gene gets it. But what do you want from a guy who absorbs the entire internet at, you know, every blessed day? I mean, it's like he does. He is amazing in his ability to find stuff. In fact, I've got one of those, oh, Bob, you scooped him stories here in the stack. Hopefully we will get to it because that came along from Gene earlier. But for right now, and a reminder, the phone number is 877-443-2366, and this is Friday on the Front Porch, so stand not upon the order of your dialing, but dial at once. We go back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Yeah.
Hey, Susan, what's up?
Well, can you hear the gods of irony laughing?
I'm listening real hard. Why don't you help?
Okay. You mentioned the guy down in Texas at the University of Austin who proceeded to unlimber a gun.
Yes.
That rang a bell. So I got on the intertubes and hit the Google.
Oh, that Google.
I am currently looking at a picture of a gentleman who could be the poster boy for the Young Republicans. His name was Charles Whitman.
Oh, wait, stop, huh?
The day he died was August 1st, 1966, at the top of the tower in Austin, on Austin University grounds, with his high-powered rifle.
And he was a young conservative?
Oh, I don't know about that, but looking at him, he would be a poster child for the young conservative. I can't say if he was conservative or not, but he's got that look. He was a former Marine.
Well, you do learn how to handle a gun in that outfit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and he handled that one quite well. But it just, you know, it comes full circle. And what is Perry's answer to that? You know, because the school shooting fad, or, you know, for rampages on school grounds started in that tower.
That's very true. And, you know, just the idea that if everybody has a gun, the guy who goes, because if these guys are, like they say, you know, loony, you're not going to stop a crazy person from shooting just because everybody has a gun, because only a person who was rational would fail to shoot knowing that everybody has a gun. That's not going to do anything about the lunatics.
Yeah, and this guy was definitely. From what his note left, he was definitely psychotic. Now, part of that, it turned out, was due to a brain tumor, but also part of it was due to the fact that he started out psychotic. He was also dishonorably discharged and court-martialed from the Marine Corps. In 1966, the Marines were tossing out anybody who didn't actually need it. They needed the bodies.
Yeah.
And, you know, just the irony. This is the start of all of the school shootings. This is where Columbine came from. This is where the Oregon shootings came from.
This is where the inspiration for Bob Geldof and the Boomtown Rats' I Don't Like Mondays came from.
Yeah, and the whole thing comes full circle. And what is Perry's... I mean, it's just, man, you are not even on the right planet.
And again, it's another one of those moments where you look up and you, and I'm sure that the horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner could put a finer point on this than anybody, than either of us could ever begin to, but these are people who keep getting put back in office. Really, the United States, Susan, has become one great big National Geographic special on, you know, when superpowers begin to consume themselves, or I don't know, one of those tribal documentaries or something, because you just want to send a film crew into places like Iowa and Texas and South Carolina and Oklahoma and just let the let the camera focus on them with the narrator in the background whispering, and now the wingnut is going to go to church and thank God for freedom.
It never occurs to these twits, that's the kindest term I can come up with for them, that, yeah, you can make it possible for everybody on the university campus to have a concealed, 9mm Glock. And then comes along your next psycho who happens to have an RPG. That he got on the black market.
Well, you know, it's so funny because you and David in Tennessee are on the absolute, I mean, dialed right in same wavelength, because David in Tennessee just noted to me, ain't no sophomore with a Glock 9mm going to do anything with a shooter with a long gun and cover.
Exactly. And that tower, I'm surprised they didn't demolish the building, but they didn't. That tower is still there. The thing is, they lock the doors now. Supposedly, you can't get up there, but given enough willingness, you want to bet you can get up there.
Well, see, that just goes to show how they clamp down on our freedoms, Susan, because if we'd only had more children with more guns on that campus, they could have shot him before he climbed, and we could still have the freedom to climb that there tower anytime we want, like God and George Washington and Phyllis Schlafly intended for us to do.
Oh, God, I do not believe these people. They just blow me away. I'm just...
No, don't say blow me away, because, no, don't do that, see?
The whole concept. I spent today watching television because, and, the sanest thing I watched, I was trying to find something to watch, and I flipped between a complimentary thing of Stars, which was rerunning old movies, and MSNBC. And the sanest thing I ran across was a rerun of Jaws.
This is not a boating accident. We're going to need a bigger boat.
Yeah, you're going to need a bigger boat. When that's the sanest thing you can find as compared to the news, this country's in really deep doo-doo.
Well, speaking of the news, and I just want to throw this out there as evidence, these guys in front of the camera and women make some pretty nice money, right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, why then would you throw it all away letting out your inner Nazi like Rick Sanchez did? Did you catch this? Have you heard this?
I heard about it.
Rick Sanchez has been fired from CNN after he made one of those Jews run the world comments.
Yeah, he got on there and proceeded to. It was almost a classic Mel Gibson rant, and I'm just sitting there going.
But I'm thinking Mel has a better nest egg.
What, sure. And among other things, he called Stewart a racist. No, he called him a bigot. He called him a bigot. That's what he called him.
Yeah. he had a nice ride on rails with grease on him.
Yeah, and he just threw it away. I don't know, maybe he just went... took one too many of those happy pills. You never know. he just completely went, wah.
But, you know, more than Sanchez's lunacy for saying something like that, and it is hateful to say that kind of stuff.
Yes.
Because stereotyping in that way is nothing short of simply the categorically wrong. However, note that CNN did not let any moss grow on their contemplations. They canned his ass. All right?
Well, yeah, they pretty much had to.
Well, now look over at Radio Rwanda. Barack Obama is a racist who hates white people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Dude's that's still working.
That's the difference between Radio Rwanda and it may be chicken noodle news, but it's still news. CNN is, to me, it's more or less legitimate. Radio Rwanda never will be. To me, they're another version of TASS or Pravda.
Yeah. I mean, look, Rick Sanchez was hauling down, had to be at least 200 large a year. And you know what? In Atlanta, Georgia, you can live pretty darn nice on 200 large a year.
Yeah. Now, people, here's what you need to do. Here is your blueprint. Because you don't want these lunatics running the country, here's what you need to do. The caging has already started. So, contact your local elections person at your local county courthouse. Verify that your registration is valid. I do that every year, even in Oregon. And then go out. You know, if you're not registered, go out and re-register. While you're at it, convince several other people to register. And then come November, vote Democrat. Yeah, I know. We got problems with Obama. We got problems with the Congress. Yeah, I understand that. Look at the alternative. It's that simple.
Yeah, it is. And the bigger problem, and it's a bigger problem and a smaller problem at the same time, is that as a whole, Susan, we can look and say, you know, you really want a Senate that is being driven like a runaway bus by the Demented's and the Coburns of the world? America neither wants nor needs that.
No.
But it's the individual races that make things so damn difficult. I mean, and once again, and I'm not trying to be completely self-centered, but look at the problem I've got.
Yeah, you are on the horns of a hell of a dilemma.
I got Joe Manchin versus John Racey.
Oh, God, what a choice.
Do you remember when Mahmoud Ahmadinejad declared that gay people cause earthquakes?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, John Racey is Mahmoud Ahmadinejad crazy.
Oh, my God.
John Racey is the guy who is running against Joe Manchin. I have a quote from John Racey for you. Now, this is the guy who said, when they asked him about, you know, how he came by his money and all of his finances and stuff.
I inherited it.
Yeah, he said, I got my money the old-fashioned way. I inherited it.
Stupid SOB.
Dumb son of a... Right. So, he gave an interview to Real Clear Politics. And he said he has zero trust that human activity is contributing to climate change. This is the quote. Sitting down. I suggest it. Remember, he is America's answer to Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. The oceans that surround the world produce 185 billion tons of CO2 per annum. Man per annum only produces 6 billion tons. So what could possibly be the concern? One volcano puts out more toxic gases, one volcano, than man makes in a whole year. And when you look at this climate change, and when you look at the regular climate change that we all have in the world, We have warm, and we have cooling spells. That's right. John, I'm a dinner jacket racy, says volcanoes cause global warming. So that's the Repiglican. And in any sort...
St. Helens had that much of a deal.
But that's the Repiglican, Susan. And in any sane jurisdiction, I would be able to go, well, that's easy. I'm voting for the Democrat. I don't care. I don't care if he's Daffy Duck. But I've got a choice between John, I'm a dinner jacket racy, and Baloney Joe Manchin.
Yeah, Joe, I'll sell the state for whatever I can get.
Bingo. Now, the only, you know, if I would love to see a debate between John, I'm a dinner jacket racy, and Baloney Joe Manchin, and just say, okay, guys, you've got 10 seconds. Who loves mountaintop removal more? I do. Oh, I'm sorry. Time's up. But it's not just that with Joe Manchin. It's, the guy privatized our workers' comp system. So that means I've got a pretty good idea of what he's going to think about when he looks at Social Security.
Yep.
Because he likes privatizing things. So here in the last few weeks, John Racy's been running, and the National Republican Senatorial Campaign Committee have been running ads against Joe Manchin, saying Joe Manchin and that Negro Barack Obama are they're great friends. They sit down and eat Negro food together. You know, the kind of sickening racist garbage that the Repiglicans do. And it's, of course, a complete and total lie. You would have to stick a tennis ball in Joe Manchin's mouth and duct tape it around him and hog tie him to get him within 1,000 feet of Barack Obama.
Yeah.
So guess what? Joe Manchin is Obama's little butt boy on health care reform. He's an Obamacare communist supporter. Right? Those are the ads. They're all over the place. I mean, all over the place right now, because the Repiglicans have enough money to burn a sopping wet elephant. So what was Joe Manchin's response? I believe in health care reform. I don't believe in the way this bill was passed. Why they overreached, I don't know. So now he said he favors, and this is a quote, repealing the things that are bad in that bill.
Yeah, the things like, oh...
So what am I going to do? What am I going to do? I know what I'm going to do. I'm voting for Jesse Johnson. The Green Party, not Green Party, but the Mountain Party candidate. I am damn sure voting for Jesse Johnson.
You've got an alternative.
Seems like one to me.
Yeah. Now...
I sure wish I could vote for the Democrat, but I can't.
Here's a question for you. As crazy as that Republican is he the type who will get in there and you won't be able to get rid of him?
Oh, yeah. Because he can use his Jed Clampett walking around money to run campaigns. He doesn't even have to raise he doesn't even have to raise money, and yet, if he's elected, he will have all the money he won't have to use his Jed Clampett walking around money. The poison industries and the coal industry and the filth industries and the Koch brothers, they're already here in West Virginia, will line up to throw money at him. We won't be able to get rid of him. He'll be tougher to get rid of than a dose of Guatemalan clap.
Oh, God, that's bad. I was going to suggest... Well, you know, if he's crazy enough to maybe be gotten rid of, but it doesn't sound like it. Ew, Crumb, you're probably right. You're probably going to have to go green.
And that will probably help Racy get elected.
Yeah, probably. But then again, you'll be able to live with yourself.
Until the coal companies kill me. And my wife and my family. And everybody else in this state. Until West Virginia is officially renamed by an act of Congress, we won't be West Virginia anymore. We'll just be Cancer Cluster.
Yeah. I don't...
I am not, Susan, I'm not kidding you. I have not dressed, and you know me, I run. I don't walk. I don't stroll. I run to the polls every election day. That's one of those things that was just instilled in me by my father and my mother. Thou shalt vote. Never before in my life have I dreaded an election day like I dread November the 2nd, because I'm going to go into that booth and I am going to be faced with nothing but an entire list of Hobson's choices.
Yeah.
Horse by the door or no horse at all.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why I keep after my representative. Because I keep telling, people from Oregon have representation. People from West Virginia don't have crap. The coal companies have representation.
No, that's the problem. The people from West Virginia do have crap representation.
Yeah.
But yeah, you get my meaning. Susan, I got to run along, but great conversation, dear.
Thank you, and give my love to Agnes.
I sure will.
Hey. Give Berg a hug for me.
I will, and I'll tell him you said to stay off the knee.
Definitely stay off the knee.
For at least the next few days. All right, Susan, take care.
Yeah.
Bye now.
You too. Bye-bye.
News Ninja Susan calling from Columbia City, Oregon. Our news ninjas are the best news ninjas on the planet, in case you didn't notice. Onward we go. He said. Hey, welcome to the program.
Now, you don't think John Stewart's a bigot now, do you? You have to listen to that soundbite. Oh, my God.
No, I have. I'm not going to play it. I'm just not going to, David. You can't make me.
Not going to play it.
No, because I'm tired of playing footage of people ostensibly on our side unloading their firearm into their feet. Now, I don't think you could call Rick Sanchez a straight-up liberal.
Right.
The only thing that I take out of this story is the fact that CNN acted quickly, CNN acted unapologetically, CNN acted decisively, meanwhile, over at Radio Rwanda, the rodeo clown could say that I don't know, he could repeat the old Jews use Christian baby blood to make their matzah thing, and his audience would say yes they do, and the freaks in the front office at Radio Rwanda would say he's only an entertainer.
I think it's a good thing that Sanchez is gone, but I wonder who his replacement's going to be.
Well, I'll tell you if the phone rings here, but I got a feeling the CNN attitude toward me is, if the phone doesn't ring, it's us.
Right. I was thinking Brad Friedman would be a good replacement.
You know who would be a good replacement? Cenk.
Yeah, Cenk would be a really good replacement.
And he already knows how to do the gig.
Yeah. They probably have him on the short list for the MSNBC. Has he subbed in?
But you know who the replacement should be?
Who?
I mean, come on. We can speculate Cenk this, that, the other. The replacement should be somebody who has been on the payroll at CNN off and on for 24 years. The replacement should be Mike Malloy.
You know how fast he would get fired. Oh, my God.
But you know what? That's beside the point, David.
Yeah.
It's the fact that CNN doesn't have the guts to get, Radio Rwanda, no, they don't hesitate a minute to put a lying, dirty, filthy, egomaniacal goon like Lonesome Rhodes the Rodeo Clown, I'm sorry, on the air and keep him there despite the fact that he's costing them money. CNN, on the other hand, doesn't have the guts to put on one straight-up liberal for an hour a day. Not one. You know, I'm serious. The just and the right, and if the microphone here was big enough, or the stick big enough, or whatever, there would be a Facebook page yesterday. Hire Mike Malloy at CNN to replace Rick Sanchez. Of course, I'm saying all this without any notion whatsoever of whether Malloy would even be interested. I'm way off the farm on this one.
Yeah, I think we know the answer to that. But I do think that media has just gone absolutely around the bend in ways that we can't even imagine yet. And I only think it's going to get even more loopier when you have this kind of consolidation, especially with the major networks having to pump out 24/7 media. And then you see what's happened with Obama and Biden talking about how it would be irresponsible if we didn't vote Democrat. You know, the funny thing about that, a lot of people have started cheering on the Obama and Biden side, but to them I would say, it's not really the left you have to worry about in terms of, it's the crazy people and the irrational people and the people who have never, really cared that much about elections until now. Suddenly they found their backbone and said, well, I'm gonna go vote. That's the people you have to worry about, not the so-called left, which is, you know, that's the funniest thing of all, Bob, because is I noticed that a lot of people are doing that on the blogs, too. I read this huge-ass tangent of how irresponsible it would be for the left not to vote for Democrats. But I just kept thinking, you know, most of the people on the Democratic side are probably going to be voting Democrat, and I just think you're just shooting yourself in the foot twice, once on the left and once on the right. And to me it's a no-brainer. You know, the fact that that's the insane thing, the fact that the White House even gives a damn about Glenn Greenwald. You know how many people probably read him in the United States? Not even 1%. Get real, people. Glenn Greenwald is not the threat. Fire Dog Lake is not the threat. Some bloggers.
Yeah, but I gotta tell you, I don't take it very kindly when Jane Hampshire runs around saying that that she speaks for liberals and progressives, because I never signed off and I never got a, hey, can I speak for you, please? I never got one of those. And you know, it's not just Jane Hampshire; it's anybody who says that they do for somebody else. You know, I have learned a lot working inside the movement for human rights in Appalachia. And I'm not holding myself as any great shakes along those lines. I won't do that. But the fact of the matter is, David, one of the things that you have to learn if you're going to do that kind of thing is that you really have to be careful you learn to look with a skeptic's eye at anybody who says, I'm doing this for someone else. That's why I make it abundantly clear when I talk about mountaintop removal, when I talk about what's being done to people in Appalachia, I try to make it abundantly clear that I'm in this because it's being done to me, and it's being done to the people I love, my family, for whom I am allowed de facto as paterfamilias to speak. And so when somebody steps up and says, I speak for, you know, there are things. I mean, that's a dead giveaway to me that it's their dodge, that it's their hustle.
Well, I don't know technically what Jane Hampshire said about regarding that, but regarding her answer on her blog on Fire Dog Lake, she carried herself pretty well on answering back to the White House and to the people who have the position of the criticism that they made toward the White House. And so did Glenn Greenwald. I mean, that was the point I was making regarding that. And I think that there needs to be more of that. And I really think that when Democrats try to, again, when Democrats push on someone, you have to vote Democrat because it's your obligation, and if you don't vote Democrat, it's all going to go away. To me, I think that's pointless to do that, because pretty much everyone who is from the left or from the Democratic position knows what they have to do when they go in the booth, and knows, and I think the person who is who criticizes people on the left for this is a little bit delusional, because again, Bob, we don't have that much sway, we don't have that much influence. The people that are going to go in the booth are going to be, I'm sorry, people, but the people who are going in the booth are going to be generally clueless and misinformed, and they're going to F up all kinds of elections all across this country. Bottom line.
I understand that. I understand that. And I hope you understand what I was saying about, well, I guess I'm a born skeptic. I don't, you know, I've got 20 years or more of Rush Limbaugh listening off and on under my belt, hearing that he is the voice of conservatism.
Right.
And frankly, no, that's, it's a dead giveaway to me. Just to give you a sense of where I'm coming from, I heard from a new listener and had a nice email exchange with him, a guy by the name of Ken. And he's telling me about this right winger, who does a show, and the guy's name is Rick something. I can't recall offhand. Not Rick Smith. But he says, you know, you and this guy's program are on my Verizon telephone internet radio listing side by side. I'm glad to be on Verizon's telephone listing. Maybe I'd be better off not to have said those tawdry things about Verizon earlier. See how it gets under your skin even when they're not paying you? See? But anyway, he says, you know, you guys are saying a lot of the same things coming from different directions, and check him out. So I haven't had time to go listen to the guy, but I did go to his website.
Mm-hmm.
What did I find, David? I'll tell you what I found. I found a guy who calls himself the super capitalist. I found a guy who runs a Ponzi scheme that he has been charged with by the federal government.
Right.
I found a guy who's a Mormon in Utah. I found a guy, basically he's positioned himself as a Glenn Beck wannabe.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, it's all, and he's got himself a little online university where you can learn to be like him. And I'm sitting here thinking, you know, it's frustrating because I don't and can't and couldn't operate that way. You know, we're straightforward. We ask people for $10 a month, less than 5 cents and 5 cents an hour for the programming that comes from the horn.
Mm-hmm.
I could never do a U2 and the other thing the guy's doing is preaching the sanctity of Ayn Rand under the guise of preaching capitalism. And so what I said in this email exchange is, you know, if you want to talk about capitalism, you got to get past Ayn Rand, and you got to go read Adam Smith. And you don't just read The Wealth of Nations. You read everything by Adam Smith. Because when you get done with Adam Smith, you'll realize the guy was a stone liberal.
Mm.
And that he has nothing to do with the sort of predatory psychotic selfishness that's involved with Ayn Randianism. But it's all indicative to me of how our side operates versus how their side operates. You know, everything is a hustle. Everything is a dodge. And there are those on our side who are engaged in the same thing. You know, the idea, like you mentioned, of vote Democrat, this sort of monolithic vote Democrat, you know, straight ticket voting, that kind of thing.
Right.
There was a day when I straight ticket voted, but that was back when they were actually counting votes. Now I go through and I specifically cast a vote in every race in which I'm interested. And that way it means something when I leave a race entirely blank, like I probably will wind up doing in my congressional race. Because I can't vote for the Republican and I can't vote for the Democrat. I just can't. Because the Democrat's actually involved in working against me.
I hear what you're saying exactly in that. I mean, I don't specifically I guess the one thing that I don't get is why is it you are so partial to the Democratic Party? Like, you have to vote it every single time. Like, why haven't you said, I'm just going to go with the Green Party here? Because, I mean, after all, it's your choice in voting. You just think it's worthless, or you just don't think it's just marginal, or what's the reason behind that?
Honest to God, I don't know.
Are you a recovering Democrat?
Well, no. I mean, I'm a Democrat. I'm still a registered Democrat.
Yeah, I know.
Because I have a fundamental understanding of the nature of the system in this country. And until such time as we call a constitutional convention, scrap the Senate, scrap the House, scrap the presidency, scrap the Supreme Court, and everything in the structure, and replace it with a parliament where you can have the Venezuelan Vestal Virgins Party, and they can have two seats in a House and work within within some sort of a coalition government.
Right.
And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. It probably works better. The British have had that system for a few centuries more than we've had ours, and they didn't seem to grind down to gridlock quite as quickly as we have. You know, it strikes me if this is that ancient history moment. You'll have to forgive me, David.
Yeah.
If you study the founding of the United States, and you study what they founded it upon, they based their institutions, and this is fascinating, and you have to go and read the history to really get your head around it. They based their institutions on the institutions of Republican Rome. Okay? Republican Rome had a Senate, and it had an assembly of the people. Oh, look, a bicameral legislature. But what they did, and they studiously tried to avoid the idea of what happened to the institutions of what came later, i.e. Imperial Rome. But these brilliant people, be it Madison or Jefferson or Franklin or any of the others, what they didn't realize is that the seeds of the devolution, the seeds of the destruction of those institutions of Republican Rome lay within the institutions of Republican Rome. Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
They are by definition going to have that happen to them. And so, and two-party factionalism rises straight out of those institutions. The optimates, the boni, and the populares, the people versus the rich, the common people versus the rich, it was the same dichotomy in ancient Republican Rome. They preferred to call themselves the boni, the good men. They were commonly referred to as the optimates, the highest men. That was the Republican Party. And then on the other side, you had Julius Caesar aligned with the populares, the people's party. And they stayed and it swirled right down the toilet together into empire. Now, the same thing has happened here. And I'm trying to get around to an actual answer to your question. I'm going to stay probably a Democrat on a sort of big platonic ideal basis. I'm going to stay a Democrat. Because I at least have the common sense to recognize that there is no room for a third party. I've said this a million times. I'll say it again. There is no room for a third party in our system as it is constituted. I don't just say that, David. This is borne out by history. You know, we started the country with George Washington saying, don't get into factionalism. Please don't get into factionalism. Because the man understood the examples that I've just cited from ancient Republican Rome upon which the country was founded. And he said, please don't get into factionalism. What did we do? We immediately got into factionalism because you had factionalists in the system that wanted to have power. And of course, the first person to leap into that factionalism was a nasty little bastard named, and I use the term technically, not pejoratively, a nasty little bastard named Alexander Hamilton, who created an 18th century version of the Roman optimates, or boni, because he believed that power should be vested in the hands of the wealthy and the propertied.
Mm.
And, of course, when one guy sets up a faction, it de facto creates a response faction of its own, and that was Jefferson and Madison and his Republicans. And they became the Populares. And it went forward. And eventually, the Republicans become what we know as Democrats, and the Federalists became what we knew as Whigs. And the Whigs, when they fell apart and fell into obscurity, there was a third party waiting in the wings. It was a young party. It was founded in a log cabin in Wisconsin, and it was called the Republicans. And so it's not like there was the Whigs and the Republicans and the Democrats. There's only room for, you know, this is like a twisted version of Highlander. There can be only two. The Whigs went away and were replaced by the Republicans. So again, two-party system. You come into the end of the 19th and the beginning of the 20th century, and you see the rise of populism. And it manifests itself in the Bull Moose Party, for whom Theodore Roosevelt ran for president and failed. And it fell away. But it was co-opted by the Republican Party into a progressive wing of that party. So then you get the rise of the Socialist Party. And eventually Eugene V. Debs becomes the single largest vote-getter on a third-party basis in American history. And the Socialist Party, yes, it does, it gets co-opted into the Democratic Party. You get people like Huey Long from Louisiana, who was a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
But he is a Democrat like we're Democrats. He wanted actual redistribution of wealth. And actual income and a closure of the income disparity gap. And so he comes up with these ideas for a social safety net, and his ideas are co-opted by Franklin Delano Roosevelt into a watered-down idea called Social Security. And that's basically how we go forward into the present day with our two-party system. And now what you see is the old Republican Party going Whig on us and being replaced by a party that is even further to the right, even more fascist, even more reactionary. Meanwhile, we liberals are wondering if maybe we should split off and go do something. Oh, look, a squirrel. Instead of changing the party. The reason that I hate this November 2nd election coming up so much, David?
Yeah.
Is because it's once again a reminder to me of the work that we as liberals have not done. Because we're still talking about what happens in November when we know damned good and well that the real thing that matters inside our party is what happens in the primaries. And we're getting better at it. God bless Howard Dean. We are getting better at it. And we're beginning to run people in the primaries. And we're beginning to run people against those godforsaken blue dogs. And we're making them sweat in places like Colorado. And that's if you want a progressive government, if you want a liberal government, then you're not ever going to get it by running off and creating a third party. It is just not going to happen. And I know I'm going to piss people off by saying that, but it is not the truth. I'm not going to tell anybody within the hearing of my voice that that's the truth. I'm going to tell you that that is a fact. Because facts are 1,000 times more powerful than anybody's truth. Sorry, but David, you do this to me. You should know better.
Yeah, I did want to leave you with some good news you may not have heard of, Bob. Scientists have found a long-awaited Goldilocks planet. A new planet now called Galois 581G has been discovered in the Goldilocks zone of red dwarf star Galois 581, just right in this instance, meaning that the new planet is at a distance from the star and has other attributes that may make it just right for human habitation. In fact, there already may be human-like life forms living and thriving on the planet. The planet was discovered by a team of astronomers led by Stephen Vogt of the University of California and Paul Butler of Washington's Carnegie Institution. These scientists credit the planet with a proper mass to retain liquid water and an atmosphere which could support life. In the words of Vogt, the planets seen in the constellation Libra could be the Goldilocks planet, neither too hot nor too cold.
Or, as we would call it in Star Trek lingo, a Class M planet. Right? Didn't, I mean, fit for human habitation?
Right.
Oh, that. Oh God. That, send me the link. I gotta sit there and just stare at it over the weekend and think of... I wonder if we've set up transport terminals yet. No, because you know what? If we transport there, we'll set up a bicameral system with a de facto factionalism built into it. Because it's human nature. Maybe we can screw up their system, too.
Well, Bob, it was nice talking to you.
David, thank you very much, and have a great weekend.
All right, later.
Bye now. Sorry, I didn't mean to monologue all over David, but we're in a mess. You know, there could be a third party, but it would need to grow like every year, and in 16 to 20 years, meaning 5 or 6 presidential elections, it would take that long to supplant one of the existing two parties. Anybody want to run to Harrah's in Reno with a $20 bill to place to bet on that? Because the odds of that are slim and slimmer. Slim and Slim just rode out of town. You know what I mean? Sure. Well, if that monologuing didn't run away all the callers. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
Hey, Jim, what's up?
That's quite a tour de raison you've just given of world history.
Yeah, sometimes I get slain in the spirit that way.
Well, you know, I think that basically our species, our race, or whatever you want to call us, I'm not sure what to call us now, I think we're just bound by certain immutable forces that eventually grind themselves into the dust. And I don't have a very optimistic...
Well, the story of human institutions is lather, rinse, repeat, isn't it, Jim?
Well, yeah, it is. And it's just, it basically goes full cycle. I mean, you know, the width of the course of empire, it starts out as a republic, then it becomes an empire, then the empire overextends itself, and then it's taken over by another force, and on it goes. So there we go. It's sad, but that's just the course of human history, and I don't think it's going to change anytime soon. It's just the nature of human beings. Human beings, I feel, in many cases, are innately self-destructive and cruel. And as far as this other planet is concerned, well, how many light years is it away?
Yeah, see, that's why I got to see the story.
Well, I mean, you have to basically support the space-time continuum in order to get there. You'd have to bend it into a horseshoe and jump from one pole to the other to get there, or you'd be traveling for an awfully long time.
Well, all we've got to do is discover that planet where they have the spice melange, and we can get our third stage navigators folding space just any time now, Jim.
Yeah, there's something I wanted to mention, and it's something that's been in the news, and it happens to do with this student from Rutgers. I believe his last name was Clementi, who took a header off the George Washington Bridge.
Yes.
You know, to me, that was one of the most horrible things that I have heard since Matthew Shepard. And I feel like the people who are responsible for that should be given the same treatment that the murderers of Matthew Shepard were given.
It was a form of torture, wasn't it?
I simply cannot understand why someone would do that to another human being for their own amusement and then put it on the Internet. I mean, this very kind, gentle person whose voice was his violin was so humiliated and driven to suicide by taking a header off the George Washington Bridge. And you know, that's just, to me, that is symptomatic of the times.
Well, that's the point, Jim. You ask, why does it happen? How does it happen? It happens because of the nature of the country in which we live.
Exactly. And, you know, and next week it'll be forgotten about, and people will move on to some other horror. But this young man was deprived of his life, and, of course, you have another hate crime that will basically be unpunished, because I doubt seriously if the perpetrators of placing that webcam in his room will get more than a couple months after they water down the punishment that's meted out. You know, in order to kill a person, you don't have to shoot them with a gun or beat them with a club or transfix them to a barbed wire cross, the way Matthew Shepard was. You can do it in so many other ways that are just as effective, even more effective. And I was just horrified to hear about that.
You know, Jim, we've dealt with a lot of bullying in our family because of the things that my son had to go through. And the girls are mean. The girls have had people be mean to them. Because my family is, to use a very, to underuse a word, we're different from folks around here. We don't go to the local fundamentalist tabernacle. And we don't do things that other people do, and we keep to ourselves and mind our own business. That's an old American virtue that has completely gone out of vogue in this era.
I'm afraid that's not enough. You know, unless you actually participate in these institutions, and unless you actually are one of the boys and participate in the party line, this, that, and the other, you're going to be singled out, marginalized. You're going to be persecuted.
Yeah, there's a video out there on YouTube, and I can't remember how to get to it, and I wouldn't recommend people go. But we have a kid up in the high school. You know, my daughter is a junior, and my son is a freshman. We have a kid up in the high school up here who is mentally challenged, to say the least. He's 19 or 20 years old, hasn't graduated. A few years ago, he was caught bringing a firearm to school. Recently, he made a point of going up to my son and threatening to slit his throat unless he gave him money to buy snuff. And there's a video out there on YouTube of this kid running up behind another kid and headbutting the kid completely from behind. You know, had no idea it was about to happen. Headbutting him from behind at the base of his skull.
Oh, I've seen that kind of cruelty, Bob. I have. In the schools. I taught school for a while. And, you know, it's...
I guess what I'm saying is that...
Where do these kids get this stuff from? They get it from their parents.
Sure they do. Sure they do.
They get it at home.
But I would be remiss if I didn't say, if I didn't point out with positive commentary the remarks of Dan Savage. You may know who he is.
Yes, I do.
Dan Savage has started a great new project called It Gets Better. And he's trying to get adult members of the LGBT community to pick up their video camera and make videos for LGBT teenagers to try to just tough it out, that it does get better, that life gets good. But in the course of penning his column announcing this, Jim, Dan Savage said, "Another gay teenager in another small town has killed himself. Hope you're pleased with yourselves, Tony Perkins, and all the other Christians out there who oppose anti-bullying programs and give actual Christians a bad name. Billy Lucas was just 15 when he hanged himself in a barn on his grandmother's property. He reportedly endured intense bullying at the hands of his classmates who called him a fag and told him to kill himself. His mother found his body."
Is this the boy who wanted to be cheerleader?
I don't know. I'm not sure entirely.
I'll tell you, there's so many, I can't keep track of them. But the thing about it is, you know, all these prejudices and all these epithets and slurs, whether it's spick, dago, fag, queen, and I've heard that word used by some people that I don't particularly like. You know, these things have not gone away. If anything, they have become more amplified and more and worse than they were in 1975.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt, Jim. And the important, I think, noteworthy here is also the fact that, you know, you said these kids learn it in the home. They don't just learn it in the home, Jim. They learn it in the culture.
Well, they learn it everywhere. I mean, you've got all these people who are in some of these institutions, I'll call them.
Well, look, Saxby Chambliss is a case in point. I remain the only liberal talker, broadcaster, whatever word we're using out there, who called for the resignation of Saxby Chambliss. Because Saxby Chambliss created and fostered an atmosphere of hatred and bigotry within his staff that made a person feel comfortable getting on a federally owned computer over a federally owned internet network and leaving a message on Joe My God blog, "All faggots must die."
Yeah, over .gov, exactly. And this man fostered a climate of understanding that sort of activity would not only be allowed, but also probably encouraged.
Do you disagree with me when I say that the person who was fired has probably already got another government job?
No, I don't, because we talked about that earlier, and we talked about the lingo and the personnel actions that would follow getting this boy another position with another representative who is of like mind, and they were telling him, well, don't do this again, not quite yet, because it's not quite permissible for you to be as open with your hostility toward LBG people or any other types of people, whether they're brown skin, black skin, or Muslim, or whatever that you dislike. We're just going to have to wait for a little while, perhaps after the November election, when we have more control in the branches of government and our bicameral legislature, in which you can do this sort of thing with impunity. That's exactly where I see this going. I really do. I don't have any bright prospects for anything.
Well, you know, I find it ironic, Jim, that we have this going on in this country when we are awash in family values Republicans, when we want to talk about teaching people to have character. The fact of the matter is, we have, for all of the right-wing religion industries talking about getting back to God, regardless of all of that, and despite all of that, we have a culture that is dramatically more coarsened and devolved over the last 10 to 20 years. And, you know, that is also thanks to Rush Limbaugh. It's thanks to Sean Hannity. It's thanks to Michael Savage. It's thanks to Bill O'Reilly. It's thanks to Toby Keith. And it's thanks to a whole host of preachers standing in their fundamentalist pulpits.
Can you imagine what Fred Phelps is going to make of this boy's suicide?
Oh, I don't even want to think about it.
You know, I was going to look for that on the internet, but I don't have any Paragard. They don't make that anymore, and I just couldn't do it. But when I saw it, and I read the story of the boy's family and his history as a musician in high school, a kind, gentle person who had found a loving relation or a sexual relation at the age of 18 with someone of like mind, and yet this is placed via webcam by two people whom I think should be dragged out and drawn and quartered right now. I really do. I don't have a lot of mercy for those people. I didn't have any mercy for those people who killed Matthew Shepard. I don't have any mercy in my heart for any of these people right now. And, you know, the time to try to say, well, we've got to be more compassionate than they, and we've got to be more this than they, we can't put ourselves on the same level as they, that time is bloody over.
Well, I will disagree with you in a matter of degree and not substance. I don't want to draw and quarter them. I want to take the young man who was part of this process, and I want to subject him to a rigorous prosecution, and I want him to go to the maximum security penitentiary of the state of New Jersey for a nice long while where everyone will know why he's there.
Well, first,
and you know what? He's not. He will wind up being somebody's boyfriend.
Well, whatever. He'll probably get out before that ever happens. What I would like to do is take you to the George Washington Bridge and let him stand where that young man stood before he took that header. That's what I would like to do. You know, I'm afraid it has made me very angry to the point that I'm getting back to an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. I don't care. And as far as certain elements of our society, which I think are inimical, I'll tell you that that's just how I feel. It may piss somebody off, and I don't give a damn. I'll give them one or two options. I'm talking about these ignorant teabaggers and their leaders. I give them one or two options, either immigration or elimination. I am sick and fucking tired of these people. And I will support what Khrushchev once said. Sometimes only the grave can correct certain mistakes. That may be radical. It may be offensive. But I don't care.
I don't think you are the only one who holds that view, Jim.
I don't bloody care. And I would show these people as much mercy as they showed that young man, and I would show other elements in our society that are trying to create so much hurt and so much pain and profound these elements of degradation in our society to the poorer classes. Now, you received that email I sent you about the distribution of income in this country.
Yes, I did.
Well, I think Rick Smith voiced that on his program. I mean, these people, you know, there needs to be some type of payday for them, too. And they're not going to listen to any sweet words. They're not going to listen to any type of compromise on our part, because they interpret that as a sign of weakness. They interpret that as us being a fool. They interpret anything.
Well, that's how thugs think.
They interpret anything we do as what Neville Chamberlain did with Adolf Hitler at Munich. There are so many more reputations of the Munich Conference of 1938 that have been recurring and recurring and recurring, and all these things do when we come back and say, oh, well, we've got peace in our time. We've got a little bit of this, a little bit of that, is to encourage the aggressor. Chamberlain should never have let Hitler get away with that. And we cannot let other people who are of like mind get away with their transgressions. I mean, that's just the only way I see it. I mean, I believe in one solution. Cut the Gordian knot. Don't try to untangle it. It has to be done with a swift sword stroke. And I am to the point that, you know, let the heavens be cleft in two and the rest fall into the void. So that's where we're going anyway.
Well, that's see, and this is important, and I'm going to have a little something about this maybe here in a few minutes, depending on how many, depending on getting through the phone calls. But, yeah, the other side, you're not saying, Jim, you are saying unabashedly something that the right wing has been saying for years. Because you know what? Right wing eliminationism is very much alive and well in the United States. And there are the segments of this society that have places they would like to send us.
Well, you know, if they want to put on black uniforms and jack boots, I've got one in my closet, too. And I've got a Luger in my closet. I'm afraid it's getting down to that. I mean, the lack of civility in this country, the lack of the willing to compromise. I watched C-SPAN the other day, and I watched this idiot Republican senator from Kansas defend supply-side economics. And I thought to myself, How in God's name is this man allowed to be in the Senate and propound this economic fallacy? It has been misproven 20 years ago.
But you know what? The American short-term memory is not 20 years long. So they can haul out that hokum and that snake oil and repackage it and resell it.
Well, maybe, yeah, maybe you're right.
And the constant attack on our educational system and the constant reinforcement of authoritarianism means that people will hear somebody, and if you put expert under their name on the TV box, they'll, well, it must be right.
Well, you know.
Look, you could tell the teabaggers to eat arsenic.
Well, I say that.
And they would.
You know, these people, I think, need a very strong corrective measure, which would entail any number of things. Because if they're going to come after, if it's the difference between me and them, if I have anything to do with it, it's going to be them who's going to be behind barbed wire. Or them who has to go to Madagascar. You follow what I'm saying?
Oh, yes, I do.
And I'm just sick and bloody tired of it. Angry. I'm serious. Anybody else who has any common sense at all will probably say, well, the man may sound a little nuts, but there is a modicum of truth in what he says.
Oh, by the way, and I'm totally off topic, but David from Maine has answered your question. The Goldilocks planet, it's only 20 light years away.
Well, that's a long, long time, buddy. Be traveling at 186,300 miles per second for 20 years? Wow.
Yeah, I'm afraid we're going to have to get the third stage guild navigators on the line if we're going to get there.
Have to get Stephen Hawking to take a look at seeing how we can get there, because he seems to know a great deal about that, and so does Albert Einstein.
Well, Jim, have a good weekend, my friend. I understand what you're saying. I really do.
I'm just very angry, and I'm serious, and I'm not going to retract or recant on anything that I said, because I felt like this all along. And basically, at heart, I can tend to be quite authoritarian. And sometimes when people don't listen, they have to feel. And I,
man, there's a gem for the evening. When people don't listen, they have to feel.
And that's exactly what they're doing to the people in this country. For example, the 20% of the people in this country who take home 3.4% of the income generated here in this nation. And you've got another 20% of the other end of the spectrum that take home almost 50%, 49.7%. Economics can be a powerful factor, and the people at the top can be overthrown quite easily, because there are a lot more of the have-nots than there are haves. And I rest my case.
Well stated. Well stated, Jim. Take care.
Good night, sir.
Bye now. I do. I understand what Jim's saying. And understand that the other side is saying, has been saying for a long time, many of the same things about you and about me. Toby Keith, part of the problem. Listen to these lyrics. We're coming right back to the phones. But with all that was said, just, you know, because I was in a place over the weekend, and I heard somebody karaokeing this song. And it made me want to go out into the street and vomit. So, misery loves company, and all we got in common is our misery, and the least we can do is share it. You want to know how we get where we are? How things keep getting worse? Give a listen.
Winter getting colder, summer getting warmer, tidal wave come across the Mexican border. Why buy a gallon? It's cheaper by the barrel. Just don't get busted. singing Christmas carols. Housewife, daddy works his ass off paying for the good life. Kids on the YouTube learning how to be cool. Living in a cruel world pays to be a mean girl. That's us, that's right. Gotta love this American ride. Both ends of the ocean burning. Funny how the world keeps turning. No claw, no hands. I love this American. You can't even sing a note. Plasma getting bigger, Jesus getting smaller. Spill a cup of coffee, make $1 million. Customs got a thug with an aerosol can. If the shoe don't fit, it's gonna hit the shame. That's us, that's right. Gotta love this American ride. Both ends of the ocean burning. Funny how the world keeps turning.
Jesus, I hate that. On so many levels. I'm going right back to the phones, I promise. Got a couple of lines open if you want to jump in and make a comment or round out the program. We got about 36 minutes left in the show, so that means about, 30 minutes of conversation left. I hate it when academic types analyze lyrics. But you know what? I'm going to do it. Winter getting colder, summer getting warmer. Tidal wave coming across the Mexican border. Why buy a gallon? It's cheaper by the barrel. Just don't get busted singing Christmas carols. Do you begin to get a working comprehension of how the right wing talking points and the right wing filth and the right wing hate sleazily, slowly ingratiate and insinuate themselves into our daily life? That's us, that's right. Gotta love this American ride, both ends of the ozone burning. Funny how the world keeps turning. Well, you know what? I guess science is not Toby Keith Longsuit, but no one has ever alleged that lack of ozone causes the rotation of the Earth upon its axis to cease. It just means it becomes a spinning cinder. And then this. How's about a little misogyny, folks? Mama gets her rocks off watching Desperate Housewives. Daddy works his can off paying for the good life. Man, we have not had a majority single wage earner household country since the Carter administration. But Toby Keith's still living out there in Leave It to Beaver Land. Kids on the YouTube learning how to be cool, living in a cruel world pays to be a mean girl. Well, I guess maybe the female who was part of the pair that drove the young man to his death in New Jersey, I guess she was a mean girl. But that's okay. We'll make a little pop song about it and make fun out of it. Plasma getting bigger, Jesus getting smaller. You know, I'm thinking Toby Keith is not the guy to be complaining about a lack of devotion in America. spill a cup of coffee, make $1 million. You know what? I'd like to spill a cup of 150-degree coffee from McDonald's on Toby Keith's crotch and see how he feels about McDonald's. But that's okay. We can just trivialize it. We can just keep trivializing it, and, it, you know, what happens, happens. ''190-degree coffee, my bad. 22 degrees from boiling. You know, David in Tennessee says, rather than internalize the stone street fighting man as I did, 15 million 16-year-olds are internalizing Toby Keith. Think about that. Indeed. Indeed. Warrior Witch in the chat room. Bob, you are now obligated to play more Red Hot Chili Peppers in return for playing that Toby Keith crap. I don't know. I don't know if I got enough Red Hot Chili Peppers to make up for that Toby Keith crap. Yeesh. And you know what's worse? When I heard the opening riff to that, I'm a Steve Earle fan, and I heard the opening riff to that god-awful song, and I realized, you know what that dumb bastard Toby Keith did? He ripped off a lick, he ripped off a lick from Steve Earle's Copperhead Road album. I got to go back and listen to it, but I'm almost damn certain of it. Back to the phones, if you guys are still there. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Hey, Sandra, what's up?
Oh, no, listen, I've never listened to that song. Is that the song where he's bitching about the lawsuits against McDonald's?
Yeah, yeah.
Right, that's hideous. It's like, you know, that song covers it's just horrible. This sort of sucking up to a corporation is like a cherry on top with that one. God, that's horrible. I don't listen. Oh, I listen to so little country. You know, unless it's fairly political.
Sometimes I'm proud of myself for maintaining my restraint, Sandra. I was in a place over the weekend, and they had the karaoke machine going.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this big dude in a Western shirt with a black cowboy hat on, and he had the sleeves ripped off just like Toby.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a karaoke in that song. And I was torn between go punch him and go vomit in the street.
Oh God, no! I mean, cause you know my country repertoire is about what who are those girls that got banned, the Dixie Chicks?
Yeah, yeah.
Like that John Anderson. I mean, I like that, and I like bluegrass. You know, just because it's bluegrass is kind of like rap music. You know, the stories.
Yeah.
Like stories. Anyway. That did my head in, right? Because, you know, I was sitting here working on a whole brace yourself. It's so hideous. Can I bitch about how horrible APA formatting is?
Oh, do please.
Oh, my God. It's so hideous. I've never dealt with any kind of formatting with so many fucking rules. Because I usually use Chicago. I know, how ridiculous is me telling you this? But you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
It's doing my head in. Anyway, yikes. Hey, so you were talking about the third party thing. You know, on top of what else you're saying, interestingly, we would have to get rid of the first past the post voting system and bring in a list or a you know, a different type of voting system in order to support a third party. So there's so many.
Yeah, like that instant runoff voting that was so in vogue a few years ago.
Something or a mixed member type of system where you have a proportional and first past the post mixture like they have in Germany.
Yep.
I mean, you know what I mean? It would be a dramatic change. So you're right. When people talk about third parties, they don't seem to understand that aspect of it. And it kind of drives me crazy because they don't even understand how far away we are from even entertaining that, you know. I don't know what we'd have to do. I think we'd have to change the Constitution, right?
Yeah, I mean, really, to get down to that, you're talking, and See, every time I hear change the Constitution, and we're not talking about some little pissant amendment. We're talking about stuff that requires a constitutional convention.
Well, yeah, because you would have to, or...
And then I get the absolute just dribbling quivers thinking about what a constitutional convention in 2010 would look like. Well, the Constitutional Convention, brought to you by Archer Daniels Midland.
Right. No, you're right. I mean, it's not a doable thing because we'll come out worse than what we are now. No, I understand. But, I mean, there are instant runoffs. Some systems in the U.S., they have included bits and pieces here and there, but like with everything in our country, it's all sort of state by state or district by district. But anyway,
I have to tell you before we go further that you just got a comment in. Just wow, bluegrass as relevant to Sandra as rap. Please tell her that somebody that grew up backstage at the Ryman Auditorium in Nashville thanks her big time.
Oh, listen, the U.S. is a big ass country with all sorts of things to value. So please, you know, I'm grateful that I discovered bluegrass. You know how it is.
Yeah, especially when what's out there being touted as a country.
Well, yeah.
Is Toby Keith.
Well, I picked all that up from my mother. My mother, you know, she listened to whatever. So, you know, that kind of rolled by, and I thought, what the hell? And so I looked into it, you know, and got just sort of, I mean, I'm not an expert on it by no means, but I know what I like and, you know, what it represents to me, so.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's getting outside one's comfort zone. It can be quite the salutary experience from time to time.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Especially when you talk about music. I mean, as bad as we talk about the U.S., you definitely can find some amazing music.
It's our saving grace, really.
Yeah, no, so I don't know. I'm always, you know, up for the tunes. But, yeah, I don't know. No, don't get me wrong. Some of the stuff that's being produced, like as far as the corporate rap and the pop music and stuff now is horrific. Maybe it's a generational thing, but I don't even know what that is.
No, see, no, I'm gonna channel my inner geezer, and my inner geezer's pretty close to the surface. It's almost my outer geezer. Our family is going through a Gaga frenzy. And I keep looking at these videos going, didn't Madonna do this 20 years ago?
Well, at least.
I mean, the business with the cross and the please, you know.
No, it's so bizarre because, you know, I mean.
Nazis in high heels with fishnet stockings?
No, I saw a picture of her and I thought, wait a minute. Am I back in 1983? You understand what I'm saying? Because we went to a Madonna concert. It was fantastic. What can I tell you? It was great. But, you know, I'm sorry. It's too soon for a retread, isn't it?
You would think.
And people, but she's disturbing with her,
I mean, her politics are right.
Well, I know, but her, eyes, the sort of contacts that are being imported illegally, and little kids are making their eyes dilate. I mean, she's a bit of a freak, I gotta say. I don't know, I'm not a freak.
And the fun part is a freak with hillbilly roots.
Well, that's kind of funny, you know. Well, where's she from?
Well, I mean, she was born and raised in New York City, but her mama was a Chi Omega at WVU, and her mama's mama was a Chi Omega at WVU.
Wow, you never know where these folks roll out.
Oh, I remember many mornings marching past their house, my little pledge group singing, Chi-O, it's off to bed we go. No.
Oh, no. Well, listen, I'm sorry, I know you were talking to David about, but the Rick Sanchez thing is really special. Have you checked it out?
Yeah, I have. I mean, what?
The thing about it is, how is he so, he's resentful. I guess I would be a second-tier guy. I'm like, where is this coming from?
You know? No, you know, Rick, you're just not as funny as Jon Stewart. It has nothing to do with ethnicity. You're just not as funny.
It's just bizarre. No, I just thought the whole sort of resentment that boiled over was just kind
but
of
is there? I mean, you know, I'm highly critical of people like Abraham Foxman who said we have to tolerate the bigotries of others. Remember when we were talking about the, when he was talking about the not a mosque?
Right, when he was trying to justify that BS.
But right, but Abraham Foxman's not out there saying CNN shouldn't have fired Rick Sanchez. I mean, that's obviously Rick Sanchez. Don't we have to tolerate the irrational bigotries of Rick Sanchez?
Well, I could have...
And I'm not defending Rick Sanchez.
Well, I don't understand. I mean, I think that he went off the deep end, but should he have gotten fired? I don't know.
How
when you have Glenn Beck talking, you know, being, you know, so racist against African Americans every other show.
But I also think there's a larger question, Sandra, and that is to give the Abraham Foxmans their due, and I'm pretty hard on them because you know, I have said, and because there's an attitude out there that anybody who ever served Alan Dershowitz a cold cup of coffee is an anti-Semite, and I just don't buy into it. But with that in mind, is there something that's boiling underneath some segment of American population, whether it's Rick Sanchez or Mel Gibson? Is there? I mean, you know what? We have no problem talking about the fact that this is a racist nation. Okay, we have no. I mean, you mentioned Glenn Beck and his attitude toward African Americans. And you can find it anywhere you care to look for it. But is there also that burbling, bubbling, anti-Semitic thing still running under this country's, just barely under the radar, so that every now and then somebody just it goes completely sideways? Oh, the Jews did it!
I do think so. I mean, I'm thinking, that's why it just seems so odd. It's like, you know, I kind of forget. I have to say, I kind of forget that, oh, right, you look at someone like John Stewart, and, you know, he's smug and smart, and the first thing you jump to is that, all the Jews run the media. You see what I'm saying? It's irrational. Just like,
I mean, that's tequila bottle material.
Just like Dr. Laura saying nigga, nigga, nigga because she forgot what the hell she was.
Right, because all of a sudden all the internal filters just shut down at the same time, like some sort of bad nuclear accident. Everything goes wrong at the same time, and it comes out.
Well, he also attacked, you know, Northeast liberals, that whole fake meme. You see what I mean? So he got a lot out. He got the Jews own everything, the horrible Northeast liberals, and, you know, I'm belittled. But you're a national broadcaster who probably makes hundreds of thousands a year. You see what I'm saying?
200 biggins at least. You know, what is it? If it wasn't for the Jews in the media, he'd be making 300?
That's what I'm saying. I'm like, excuse me? What are you talking about? I don't know. I just thought that I said, first of all, I'm thinking, how are you letting this comedian get under your skin? You see what I'm saying? I'm like, aren't we adults here? I guess not.
Well, have we never been to a comedy club? Because there's rule one. I don't care how bad the comedian is. Don't heckle. Because they do it for a living. You're doing it for amateur hour. They're going to eat you.
And not only that, but if they're so touchy about John Stewart, why don't they look at themselves and what a piece of crap organization all these corporate media? I think that's more the issue, is that John Stewart keeps calling them on their shitty product, and then they get upset. You see what I mean? Because that's what's going on. They produce an inferior product. Unfortunately, it's protected by the Constitution. And they get upset when it's called for what it is. That's all. But he had to lose it a bit when he went Jew. I'm like, why do you have to bring up the Jew?
I don't get it. That's what I'm saying. It's like there's a switch and you just...
Yeah.
I hate my life. I don't like making $250,000 a year. I'm going to scream about the Jews. Boom. Done.
Yeah. I know what I'm saying. It's completely just beyond irrational to the point where that fool... destroyed his whole career. I'm like, damn.
Yeah, because, I mean, I reiterate, he ain't got no Mel Gibson money.
No, but it don't take much, I guess, for these people right on the edge. I don't know what to make of it, but...
Well, I know what to make of it. Here in another month or so, maybe 6 months or whatever the severance package was, he will be doing the nightly news in Opelika, Alabama. Good evening. I'm Justin Case. Here's the news.
Listen, you're probably right, but anyway, and of course, you know, I'm so jaded because I was laughing. I said, damn, these people, hella stupid. And how are they rolling with all their hatreds and resentments? And, you know, they seem to be living good lives, but Jesus, I guess not. Anyway, and then, you know.
Had a bad day at the track. I don't know.
Listen, I mean, you know, every other person I know is having a bad life. Hello. So when I see this shit, I'm like, oh no. What else am I going to do but laugh?
You know, I'm not going to go down the poor pitiful me trail. But you know, I can't imagine making $50,000 a year. I can't imagine making 20.
At this point, that's what's going on. So that's why, you know, and of course I'm inclined to bust out laughing because it's like, wow, idiot. Goodbye. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Oh, I know. With because you know what? I was what's that guy that comedian the Knuckle Dragon comedy tour or whatever works with Jeff Foxworthy and Larry the Cable Guy, Bill Engvall.
Oh, okay.
His shtick is here's your sign. Well, you know what? Rick Sanchez just did a here's your sign moment.
Well,
hey Rick, you got some coke that smelled like gasoline earlier today, and you're in a bad mood, and your sinuses are tender. Why was that, Rick? The Jews. Here's your sign.
Yeah, I mean, it's right up there with that. Who is that spring from Seinfeld? Remember when he lost?
Sure.
It's the same kind of, I mean, I just think there's just so much wrong with civil society in this country. I don't know what to make of it.
Yeah, you kind of understand Jim getting a little getting a little upset.
Oh, well, no. Jim kills me. I know he's been kind of serious, but I've been waiting for some Rod Stewart inappropriateness, something. Come on, Jim. But I understand. I understand the mentality because the shit is really quite bad.
The thing, if we're pressing any topic this evening, it is that this is all the culture where the kid took the header off the George Washington Bridge and everything and Rick Sanchez, the Jews, it's all a deliberately created culture that makes it happen.
It's sick, though. I mean, it's some deeply disturbing things go on here, and of course, you know, I'm always tying it back to the lawlessness at the top of society, you know? I can't help but think there's a serious connection between these people getting away with everything.
Look, I want to, you know those Haitian people who don't have freaking tents because of Tom Coburn?
Yeah, you know what?
I don't just want to give them a tent. I want to put it up in Tom Coburn's yard.
No, it's beyond. It is so disgusting. And what's more disgusting is the fact that he was trying to keep that shit secret. That's what really makes me sick. And I'm glad it came out, however it did.
Well, he got outed by the Associated Press. Oh, look, journalism.
However, it's foul. I mean, it's just stunning that. It's so gross. But listen, you know what's also, Bank of America has ceased their foreclosure now. This is the fourth financial entity that's done that. Now, you need to keep your eye on this story because this is a really frightening situation because what's going on is that all their bad assets risk being exposed behind this. Because if they can't foreclose, then they're saddled with property.
And the other thing that goes hand in hand with that, Sandra, is the reason that they're backing off of the foreclosures is because the floor to the real estate market keeps sinking.
Yeah, and who's going to be stuck with that are the builders, because they're going to have to put a price on it at like 30% below. I mean, listen, this is so endless. The housing market is like the underpinning of our economy along with consumption. And it is just an absolute mess. I mean, you know, at this moment, all them people, 250,000 people, can come back now and say, hey, what the F? I mean, it's endless what can go on, the repercussions of what's going on here. It doesn't seem to be no end to it. Because this is the fourth one. It keeps popping up. And I'm like, who's going to step in on this one? What's going on?
And, of course, pay no mind to the fact that it looks like the TARP program that everybody hated, including me and you.
Yeah.
To one degree or another. It looks like the thing's going to come in at maybe a $50 billion loss instead of a $700 billion one.
Yeah, but you know what? I caution you to be careful with that, because you need to keep your eye on the mark to magic. Remember that?
Yep. Oh, true.
You cannot forget about these major things that went down a couple of years ago, because the mark to magic one, I still ain't recovered from that. I'm like, oh, wait. The Congress passed a law to allow these bitches to assign a different value to these bad assets. So now we have a new wave of this coming in through this, people backing off the foreclosure because, oh, surprise, surprise, when you roll up, securitize all these, mortgages, you don't know who owns it. And so how do you conduct a court procedure, right?
Right. There are, oh, there's some fun stuff coming in the courts.
Oh, God.
not coming, already happening. Where the lenders, you know, the reason they're shutting down the foreclosure business is because they can't prove they're entitled to foreclose.
Well, that's the thing, and that's all because of the securitization that they so cavalierly instituted in order to sell, you know, a bunch of people of color and people who, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's how they justified it, because they, you know, oh, we can just move this along and have some investor from India buy it. We don't give a F. And so it just rolled like that for years and years.
Yeah, or some schmuck in Iceland.
Well, yeah, but Iceland's interesting because they're putting that bitch on trial.
Yeah. Oh,
I'm like, wherever I can find it. Because, see, I don't know. I have to look more into this, because I looked at that when that first happened with GMAC. I thought, oh, you know what? This is not good. And it's just, you know, one after another. And I'm thinking, you don't hear no chit-chat about it either, you know? Nothing.
No. No, because, well, you know, we on our side are so, there is, and I can guarantee this out of my own experience, I can get ready to do a show and I can have a stack of 30 stories. If I get to 10, I'm doing good. And it's hard to work, sometimes it's hard to work the complicated stuff into the front of the stack.
Oh, yeah, no, I definitely agree. I mean, trust me.
And I don't mean from a listener perspective. I mean from, you know, me comprehending perspective.
Oh, no, I mean, listen, it's taken a long time for me to even get barely literate with some of this economic shit. So, I mean, it's so difficult, you know, and you're never too sure about what you're reading, and you got to keep remembering what's come before. It's very difficult.
I just feel like I'm watching somebody deal three-card Monty.
Yeah, yo, you're right about that. I mean, the thing is, though, you cannot have a system like this. I mean, how many years? This is the third year now of this since the fall of 2007, right?
Yeah.
3 years ago now. I just read a report where they're saying from the UN, from the International Labor Organization, maybe 2015 you might see some normalization in unemployment numbers. How many years is that from now?
That's a long... For anybody ain't got a job, that is a long damn time.
Well, did you see the people in Spain? They burnt shit up. That looked crazy. Straight up riot.
Well, you know, but that's the thing we need to remember. We've had a lot of culture talk tonight, Sandra. And it is not a long trip. It's about, you know, maybe a 2 week wait tops before people whose worlds have, you know, gone completely to hell decide to take everybody with them. And, you know, hence what you saw in Spain.
Yeah, well, no, it's just sort of, you know, that was the first time in 8 years that they had a, you know, a sort of big nationwide strike like that. And apparently, there's a few more being lined up. But the thing about Europe, I heard it described as you have Greece hanging off a cliff and then, you know, the other countries sort of dangling and
yeah, and some of the European Union countries stomping on fingernails.
Right, and they're all trying to hang on, and you know, the Ireland situation is really bad news because see them poor people have been at it for 4 years with this austerity, yet their situation is still horrible. So you look at that and you think, well, why are they subjecting everyone else to this austerity? Because it obviously ain't working.
Well, you know, I don't want to poo-poo anybody's hard work, but they did have a strike in Spain, and they're not averse to striking in France. And, you know, I remain convinced that the strike is the most potent weapon that working people have.
Well, it's, at this point, it's the only one. And, it, you know, I don't know what has to give in this country, but you keep your eye on this housing stuff. The housing thing is uniquely American.
Ooh.
Something you can look at, and, you know, the anchor for Americans is pretty damn deep. So this is not getting the reporting that it should, obviously not, but I think that this is horrible.
Well, you know, that's the American thing. You've mentioned Spain, you've mentioned Greece. You know, what about the news that every Irishman owes 22,000 euros to the Irish government to get the banks back on track?
Exactly. No, that's the thing, and that's the route that they took, which was a horrible mistake.
Seamus don't play that well.
It's horrible what's happened there, and there's no reason why the so-called rating agencies or the bond vigilantes will look at Ireland and say what they're going to, you know, they're going to downgrade it still. Anyway,
yeah. Well, one last thing before we go, if you don't mind, in talking about strikes, and it's the only thing we got. You know, we've got this big to-do, and I hope it goes well. I hope they get a half a million people on the mall tomorrow. But
is that what the projections are?
Well, you know, some people are saying 300,000. You know, it remains to be seen. But, you know, if they get 50,000, it'll be good.
Well, I'm hoping they get a lot more than that. But, see, I can't separate, you know, that it's dueling TV hosts. I'm sorry.
Well, it kind of is, and not just that, but it's on a Saturday. You know what? We need, if the working class in America wants to teach the teabaggers how badly they are needed, it needs to happen on Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday. There needs to be a nationwide general strike.
Well, trust me, all those European actions, that was like during the week, you know?
Yeah, and you know what? It gets people's attention.
Well,
you do it on a Saturday. You know, you'll talk about it on talk radio on maybe Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. But ultimately, you know, ultimately, what was the impact of White Stock beyond hustling Glenn Beck's book?
Well, exactly. It was a spectacle, you know, for us to vilify, as far as I'm concerned. But I wonder about the numbers. Now, if we're surprised and the numbers are just ginormous, you know, that might be interesting.
It will be. But again, it's a matter of maintaining the energy afterward.
Well, where is it going to be? Where is it going to be shown?
I don't know. I know it's going to be on Free Speech TV because Laura Flanders and Tom Hartman are hosting. I got an email from Progressive Democrats of America about it.
Oh, and you can get that online, right?
I do believe you can, yeah.
Pretty sure. And nothing on C-SPAN, though?
That I don't know. I haven't heard anything about their coverage. So, yeah, hard to say. So, Andrew, I got to hit it, but a wonderful conversation this evening.
Oh, yeah, no, have a good weekend.
All right, you too. Bye now.
Bye.
And let's see. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob, how you doing?
I'm doing good.
Andy, Redwood City.
Hey, Andy. Hate to say it, but make it quick, brother.
Yep. Sandra, tough act to follow. Yeah, 8,000 of those mortgages were just signed off, the foreclosures from B of A, with the woman not even reading any of the documentation. That's typical in the finance field. Just do a quick and dirty job. Don't do your proper due diligence. Just get it out the door and collect the check. That's how they operate. And that's rampant throughout the financial field, period. Not doing your due diligence. Doing a half-assed job. And that's, it's just crank it through, collect the money, and go.
But if you do the serious due diligence job, none of that crap can happen, can it, Andy?
That's right. If you're doing the due diligence, you would slow down the process considerably, and you wouldn't have all the problems you have. So they're paying for it now, those morons in the banks. And keep in mind, you have to keep in consideration, it's $14 trillion that we shoveled out. Don't concentrate on this 780 billion TARP.
Okay.
That's small potatoes. It's everything else the Fed and the Treasury did to backstop the banks. It's $14 trillion. It's all the guarantees they did, all the buying of the CDOs, the collateralized debt obligations, all these securitized things that were bought. That's where all the money got sucked out of our system. And Fannie and Freddie, all the backstops there. You know, $300 billion for the CDOs that Citigroup was holding. It was like another $200 billion for the CDOs backstop B of A had. The AIG stuff is thrown in there. $14 trillion is what we shoved out. They like to, you know, focus on the $780 billion. That's baloney. That's baloney. It's $14 trillion. You know, one thing, that Rick Sanchez thing, one thing that I do would agree with him on is John Stewart. I didn't like the way he jumped on Helen Thomas. And John Stewart just raked Helen Thomas on
true,
the
true.
I love
absolutely
Helen
true. And the other thing, Andy, like is the false equivalence that he's created with this idea that 70% of us are sane. And, you know, that's true. But
are you going to be there tomorrow?
No, I can't be there.
I would love to be there.
I would. I really would. But the idea, I hate seeing these false comparisons between Glenn Beck and somebody on our side, because there isn't somebody that compares to Glenn Beck.
Right, and that's what he's doing with the October 2nd event, too. He's making it look like, you know, that's a comparison with Glenn Beck, and it shouldn't be considered that way. You're right, he does that. He does that false comparison thing. The other thing, too, Chris Christie was the governor of New Jersey that went to back up Meg Whitman.
Yeah.
She's really got her friggin' panties in the wad now, boy, with that letter that she got from the Social Security Administration with her maid that her husband actually signed.
Yep.
And that woman all read the lawyer for the helper that she had there actually pulled out. Her name is Nikki something. Pulled out and has her husband's signature on, and they swore the other day, you know, in front of the press that they never got a letter from the Social Security Administration. Allred has a press conference right after.
Oh, yes, they did.
With her husband's signature on it.
Hey, Andy, I got to run, brother.